Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism in order. Let the record reflect, the time is 5:04. Today is Tuesday, April 10th, 2007. We have Representative Coring, Dugan, Gatto, and myself, Newman, and Representative Dahl present this time. What we're going to do today is we had scheduled up House Bill 217. The sponsor of that bill is working on a CS. I've discussed the CS with her. I think she's got some good changes, but there's some fairly significant changes. So I want to, what we're going to do today is hear from the people who wanted to testify on House Bill 217. There was people who wanted to public testify. They've taken the time to come down to Juneau. They've taken the time to sit in the LIOs to testify on that. I want to recognize them and allow that to happen. Then we will break from public testimony. We will hold this bill till next week to where we can all see the CS, have a chance to look at that, so make sure everybody understands it. We have a good discussion on the CS and move forward from there. So when we get done with the public testimony, we will go to Mike Andrews is going to give us a great presentation on working together for jobs. We're going to have a little bit of information on the natural gas pipeline and job development on that and what he's doing on there. We'll be able to talk to him about a little bit more of the programs. And for people who don't know Mike, he's worked extensively across the state with quite a few programs and making sure we have job development programs across the state. So, again, we will just do public testimony on 217 and then hold that bill for today so everybody gets a good understanding of what's really going on. With that, we will go to the LIOs first and have go to Nome LIO, all the way out to Nome. Richard Benneville. Richard, are you there?
I am indeed, sir. Thank you.
Name and affiliation, please.
My name is Richard Benneville. I'm the owner of a small tour company in Nome, Nome Discovery Tours. Come see us. And I'm also representing the Nome Chamber, and I'm also on the board of the State Chamber Board.
Go ahead, sir.
And this is difficult being a small owner, and we don't get much cruise ships up here, but we're looking forward to it. But I'll be very honest with you. I think it's very hard on the small business owner, 217. I think it's punitive to the small business owner. I guess I can see where it might have stemmed from originally, but you know, I got to be honest with you, gentlemen, I'm a liberal Democrat, but in my heart, I guess I'm a little more Republican sometimes, because it just seems all anti-business, anti-small business in particular. It seems to me to be somewhat punitive to the cruise ship companies too. It seems to go against fair play. It seems to go against what I have always considered at 62, kind of the American way of business. Not that my middle name is Iacocca, but I try my hardest. And it just seems to go against the spirit of small business in Alaska. So I'm hoping that this will change and that you not support the amendment.
Mr. Benneville, this is Representative Newman. You said that you did not support House Bill 217, that you thought it was somewhat anti-business. Can you talk about that a little bit more? How did you come up with that conclusion?
Well, I'll be very honest with you. I don't have my original notes with me, and I have a copy of the bill here in front of me. And what I have in front of me, to be enacted by the legislature, Section 1, this is about disclosure of fees, and you can either the amount of the commission or percentage of the tail return, who gets it, or there's an option that they can post a board, that there may be cheaper alternatives available if they go shopping on their own. And I don't know. I mean, I understand, I think, where a bit of this comes from, but I don't. It seems to me to smack of, not to smack of anything, but it seems to me to go counter to free enterprise and hurt the small business. Perhaps I'm in Nome. I don't get the traffic. We don't see the traffic up here, you're in the southeast, but one day we hope to. and more and more of the Dreadford Cruises, and I don't think I'd like that as a businessman. I'm perhaps not saying it very succinctly, but I hope I'm being somewhat clear.
Thank you, Mr. Benneville. Yes. Do we have any other questions? Representative Gatto.
Thanks. Sir, I'm going to take a really wild guess and assume you voted no on the initiative.
I believe I did, sir.
But the initiative passed, and what this 217 does is try to implement what the public voted in favor of. And I don't know how that we can avoid it. What the bill does, we can change the bill to modify it somewhat. We can do a lot of things, but we can't repeal it. So what we're looking for in 217 is a way to implement something that was already passed by the voters.
Well, then perhaps I have to beg ignorance that I'm not quite under. Perhaps my testimony is an error, but are you suggesting other wording, or is that possible? You know, it reminds me of a recent election we had here, a referendum, in which the proposing a constitutional amendment, and I'll be honest with you, a number of people who I know it's a different subject, but the wording of the amendment was such that it was not clear what was a yes and a no vote. So, again, not being perhaps as up to speed as I am, I guess I don't have much comment to make then.
thank you, Mr. Benville.
Thanks very much.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Benville.
Thanks for your time.
We do have Cynthia Drinkwater available. We probably won't be doing that one today. We do have some people. Do we have any more off-net or online? Hearing none, we will go to the audience for public testimony in the audience. We're going to start at the top of our list here, Stan Stevens. We'll start at the top and work her down. We've got two or three people here.
I'm Stan Stevens from Valdez, Stan Stevens Cruises and Wildlife Trips. And thanks, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to testify on House Bill 217. I have turned in written testimony, and this is what I'm doing right now is a little bit different than what I turned in. But I want to thank you for letting me speak on House Bill 217, which I fully support. I have already turned in written testimony that I have to say now is a little different. Last summer, I went on TV against the cruise ship ballot measure 2. Not strongly against the tax issue, but other items added to the cruise ship initiative. I've always been for small business. And if you know me, I've always spoken out in favor of small business in Alaska. When I went on TV, many of my friends asked what I was doing, and I explained this initiative isn't real. If you have a grudge against the cruise ship industry, that's not my business. You need to take it up with the industry. But when you vote for something that isn't real to satisfy that grudge, that is wrong. Disclosure of this initiative shuts down the American way of being competitive in the marketplace. It shuts down competition, creates a new precedent which might go beyond this initiative, and it's basically un-American. House Bill 217 helps to solve some of these problems under the current law. And thank you.
Mr. Stevens, Representative Dahl.
Yes, I've heard you testify before, and it was very good, and thank you for coming again. Do you think there should be any regulation at all of cruise ship commission rates? Is there any room for regulation, or do you think it's okay to have it sort of freewheeling?
Personally, I believe that there is no need for it. I mean, I wouldn't want, put it another way, I don't think that I would want my business, in a competitive market, it's very important that you know that you're competing with your neighbor, but you don't always know what his price is, what his intentions are. This kind of opens that up and closes down the competition part of it, which is the way, you know, most businesses do business. It's an American way of doing things. And if you shut that down, I think it could really hurt, forgetting about the cruise ship industry. I'm not talking about the cruise ship industry. It could hurt the rest of us that are doing business in Alaska.
Thank you. And I want the record to reflect that we were joined by Representative Lynn at approximately 5:07 today. Representative Dahl?
Yes, and I just a quick follow-up on that. My impression was on this initiative that it was to protect the small business and actually have a regulation against the cruise ship. But what you're testifying is that it's not meeting that, and it's actually quite different than that.
That is my opinion. That is quite different than that. That it will cause problems for other Alaska business.
I see. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Stevens? Thank you. Corin Gerhard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lauren Gerhard. I work for Four Seasons Tours here in Juneau. We're an Alaskan-based company. We employ about 70 people in the summertime here, about a dozen people year-round. And we contribute about $1 million into the local economy every year through wages, supplies, fuel, etc. We sell our tours on the cruise ships that come here to Juneau. And in order to do so, we meet certain quality standards. We make a commitment to the company as to the volume that we're able to handle. So we've made a sizable investment in boats and infrastructure to be able to handle this business. And as a consequence, we enjoy a pretty good relationship with our cruise ship partners. And to counter something that I heard last week, we don't do business on a cash and carry basis. I don't know what that is exactly, but we invoice the cruise ship companies. They pay on a regular basis by wire transfer or check, and it's all above board. It's all monitored by taxing agencies and like that. So, but the negotiations we have with the cruise ship companies to sell our product are done in private, as are most negotiations between companies as to what they're going to sell their product to a retailer for. In this case, the cruise ship companies behave as a retailer, much like a travel agent, for tour suppliers such as ourselves, and in turn for the volume business that they will give us, we're willing to discount our services. But that's a negotiation that's done in private, and we think it ought to stay that way, and we think HB 217 addresses that. And we just have to ask the question, why are we singled out as providers of product to a retailer, in this case cruise ships, to be required to disclose what our wholesale price is? I don't know of any other businesses that are required to do so. If there are, by law, it's probably very few. But, you know, to be consistent, if we're going to require this of this transaction with cruise ships, we ought to require it of all travel agents in the state. They should be having to disclose what their commission is, and I don't think that's fair. You know, in my opinion, what people were voting on in Prop 2 was the head tax. And, you know, kudos to the initiative generators. They got it passed. That's fine. But, you know, 9 people out of 10 that I asked what they were voting for had no idea this particular thing was in it, along with about 5 or 6 other things that really aren't related to head tax. The only thing they had seemed to have in common was that they were designed to make doing business with the cruise ship companies difficult, I guess. And the other question I have to ask is why did we need this particular provision? Who is helped by this? I don't think there's been any clamor from cruise ship customers that there's there's a serious problem with commissions on ships. I think most travelers these days are aware that ship companies charge a commission, and if the fix is this bill that requires the disclosure that a commission is paid, I have no problem with that. It's a fact of life. People expect that. But to require me to disclose my wholesale price to the public and my competitors and everybody else, I just don't think it's fair. So, I also think it's appropriate for elected officials to review the results of this law that came about by initiative and try to fix what was wrong without removing the intent. And I think HB 217, as I've seen it, does that job for us. So I would appreciate your support of this. Pass it out and let the House vote on it.
Thank you, Mr. Gerhard. For the record, we have been joined by Representative Johansson. Mr. Gerhard, would you describe your relationship with the cruise industry as a wholesale to the cruise industry? Your business sells
wholesale?
I would,
yes.
So, and that was a yes for the record?
Yes.
So it's my understanding then that if because they book 1,000 bookings or because they a large quantity, mm-hmm. that you give them a discount and you know that those are going to be coming,
correct.
You have a certain contract, whether they're filled or not, you will get.
No, there's no commitment to any specific level. We just know that we can do that kind of volume with them. From a historical basis, these things are negotiated periodically. It's not cast in stone, these commissions, and it's strictly a business decision. Am I willing to give up this much margin for X amount of potential volume? And it's the kind of decision people make every day in business all over our country.
Mr. Gerhard, do you feel that it's hard for other businesses, and your What is it specifically that your business does?
We sell whale watching, wildlife viewing cruises.
Okay, so do you feel that it's difficult for other, if somebody else wanted to come in and have a whale watching type of business, a business similar to yours,
mm-hmm.
do they have the same opportunities that you have to go to the cruise industry
of
and
course.
Compete for your business?
This is a free country. We can all approach whoever we want to sell whatever we want. But the cruise ship companies make a decision based on the level of investment you're willing to make as a business owner in the product field that you're in. And they also have to make a rational decision as to how many products they can put in their tour program in order to sell effectively. In other words, and I can't speak for the cruise industry, I don't know how they make these decisions exactly, but they're not in a position to offer in their tour program every single vendor that ever wanted to come aboard their ship and sell product. But I think it's absolutely appropriate to meet the intent of this initiative for them to disclose that there are people on the shore that they can buy from if they don't want to buy the products we've selected that we know we, being the cruise industry, can supply in volume, guarantee the quality, back up the product in case there's a problem in delivery. If people miss the ship because the tour vendor is late getting them back, the ship company works with that vendor to get them to the next port. If you buy a product on the beach and you don't make it back to the ship doesn't even know where you are. There's a reason these relationships developed.
Mr. Gerhard, do you feel that there's a very competitive nature in businesses for the cruise line industry businesses?
You mean like the business I'm in?
Mm-hmm.
Well, very much so. And that's why I don't want my wholesale price disclosed, because I'm in competition with other people that are looking for the same business.
Representative Dahl?
Just out of curiosity, if you found out that a company like yours did this in Ketchikan, sold business, had businesses like this and worked mm-hmm. with a cruise ship, and the cruise ship industry charged them half of what they're charging you in terms of a discounted rate, or, you know, what you're paying is a discount rate, and they got a much better deal, would you want to know that? Would that bother you if you found out that it was you were treated very differently?
I want to know that. You know, that's
right.
Industrial espionage, if you will. But I don't think it's fair for the state to come along or the initiative process to generate a situation where that's disclosed publicly by law. What is the purpose of that? Now, if I can figure out what my competitor is getting through my business acumen, well, more power to me. But I don't think the state government, through this initiative process, has any right to require that of me, to disclose my wholesale prices.
And before we get to Representative Dugan, I just wanted, for the new members that are here, or that have got here a little bit late, there has been a CS distributed that's version E. We will not introduce version E because Representative Holmes is working on a different CS. She feels that she's maybe been able to recognize the needs of, and she said that I'm okay to talk about this, maybe the initiative sponsors, that we still meet the intent of the ballot initiative, but we're still protecting the rights of the small business owners. And she can talk to us next week when we will be needing next week to talk specifically just on 217. We don't have any other anything else scheduled at that time. So I just want to make sure everybody is aware that we will be having a different CS than the one that we have in front of us. We will not hear version E. Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I've been wanting to ask somebody this, and I guess you're the one that's here, so I'll ask you.
Okay.
We had an election in which the voters decided that this should be done. That's a settled matter. Apparently, if I understand your argument correctly, you don't like that they did that. You don't think it's fair that they did that. And you think that we ought to do something that changes what they approved under the theory that they didn't really understand what they were doing. And if that's not a fair summary, please.
It's not.
Summarize it yourself, then, so that I understand.
You know, we had our chance when the election was taking place to try to inform the public about its contents. I will state categorically that what people were voting for was a head tax. They weren't voting for this thing. But I understand it's part of what got put into the fine print, and whether people understood that or not is not for us to argue at this point. What I'm saying is that I think the stated intent of this particular of seven totally unrelated requirements can be met by this fix that is proposed here. I think the intent of the voters is met. The voice of the voters in this is very faint, in my opinion, but I think you can hold your head high and say you did your job as a legislator to review and fine-tune what was put before the public.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don't we have to assume that the voters knew exactly what they were doing and voted to do this on purpose?
That's fine.
And if we did that, don't we have to assume that their intent was to do just this, to require exactly what the initiative says it requires?
I think that the intent is to describe to tourists that the relationship with these cruise ship companies involves a commission. I have no problem admitting that. But for me to have to provide my precise wholesale prices, it's overreach is what it is, in my opinion.
Representative Dugan?
Thank you. I'm not trying to get into an argument here.
Sorry.
You have to understand, I don't know how any of the members at this table voted on this initiative. But this is not, in my view, a particularly discretionary matter for us. You know, the people of the state of Alaska did this.
Right.
And absent, you know, some showing, which I'm not even sure how anybody would make that showing, I don't think that we can assume that we know why they did it or what parts of it they were voting on or what parts of it they didn't pay any attention to. You know, because we start assuming that, people will be able to make darn good arguments that they didn't know what they were voting doing when they voted for me, right? Or Representative Corrine, or, you know, anything else that's ever been on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, a lot of the testimony here has been, you know, for one reason or another, this isn't fair to us, we don't like it. I understand all that. If I were in your position, I wouldn't like it either.
Mm-hmm.
But it is what it is. And to come back, I mean, I just want everybody who wants to make this argument to the committee understand what it is they're asking us to do here. Mm-hmm.
And I understand from previous testimony that there was a question as to whether you could actually make this change through Ledge Legal, and I encourage that inquiry. I don't know what happened as a result of that.
Yeah, they told us maybe yes, maybe no.
Okay, well, there's your window.
I'd just like to mention, too, that, you know, quite often the legislature goes back, and I think it's the legislature's job. It's an issue that involves the state. Certainly, Representative Holmes brought this forward as an issue, but it's our job to look at it. I mean, that's certainly our job. That's just doing our job. You know, we just looked at a 90-day initiative that passed through the floor that had some changes, too, you know, subtle changes. I think it's typical that we do that in the legislature, that we look at different things like that. But Representative Holm asked us to look at this, and we will go through the public process. That's the legislative process, and I think that that's the fair process. Representative Gatto, and then Representative Lynn.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I try to listen very carefully to what people say in testimony, and you threw some numbers out. You said four or five other things, and then you got the number up to seven.
I don't know exactly. I don't have the bill in front of me. It was 12 pages of stuff. So.
All right. But whenever somebody says something, I think, that doesn't seem to jive with what the facts are, it kind of leads me to ask some more questions. So I'm going to ask you a question. The reserves tax was also a ballot measure, too, and it failed. Do you think it would be appropriate for us to say, you know what, I don't think the public recognize the significance of a reserves tax, and we should repeal what they said and go ahead and institute a reserves tax? Or, let me ask you a second question before you answer that. The 90-day session is kind of a hard number. I wonder if they really meant a 100 and 105-day session. Should we then change that? And should we go to this bill in front of us and say the public probably wasn't aware of what they were voting on for the head tax? What they really were voting on was part four, which was the information that is supposed to be revealed. Nobody knows the answers to these things. We do know this, though. I can count, and what was passed is before me. And whether I, and most everybody here knows how I voted on the cruise ship initiative, but I did not envision that people voted in favor of part one, took part four, and then just said, well, I don't like part four. I hope the legislature meets and repeals part four, but I'm going to vote for it. I can't say that.
I know that.
And so I don't want to simply object to the people's wishes out of hand and say, and support essentially what your testimony was the people may have erred in not understanding what was there, because there was a $2-something million campaign that issued four flyers a day at times. And the campaign opposing them was, I think, 37 cents. There must have been a stamp somewhere that mailed a letter. That was plenty of advertisement. I'm convinced the people had ample opportunity to read everything, listen to it on television, watch it on television, get it in the mail, hear it on the telephone. There was no shortage of advertisements. And I don't know how I could possibly sit here and say they didn't know. I don't know how to do that. So what I will do, though, and I'm in favor of the bill myself, is to say I think what we can do to make this somewhat easier for businessmen so it's not as harsh, but not to repeal it. I can't do that. I will, though, deal with how to protect private business. I'm for protecting private business. But the bill is pretty explicit, very explicit. I can't repeal the explicit parts. However, we'll work with you. I just ask that if you testify again and you mention some numbers, somebody's going to come back and say, go ahead and tell me what those numbers mean, all seven of those things. And you have
to have the bill before you. I can show you what
you don't have to.
You don't have to, but I'd be prepared to, because I think there are four parts.
Representative Lynn?
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony today. As I read this, the section one, it leaves in exactly what the voters voted for, but it expands it into you may either do exactly what the voters voted for or make this disclosure as a paid promotion of a shoreside vendor, and maybe you can get a tour cheaper on shore. So it actually expands potential for disclosure rather than decrease it. And so that's why I'm on board with it so far. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for Mr. Gerhard? Thank you, Mr. Gerhard.
Thank you.
Do we have anybody else in the audience? Did I see a hand? One more person, somebody else in the audience would like to, new testimony? I believe you testified last time, but.
Is this new if I testified last week?
Well, it's.
I don't need to testify at this.
I'd like to give it a go.
Well, come on up, come on up. If you're here and you want to take the time to be here, then if you have something to say, then we certainly want to let you talk.
My name is Robert Jacobson. I'm a lifelong resident of Juneau. And I got into the visitor industry business about 30 years ago, operating float planes off the waterfront in downtown Juneau here. And about 25 years ago, Friend and I started a business, and we approached one cruise line to see if they'd be willing to sell a tour product of some guys that were quite wet behind the ears, and they were willing to let us give it a go. And since then, we've created quite a good little business and shared it with our employees, and now that small airline off the waterfront's worth millions, and we probably enplaned about 80,000 passengers last year, and we provide a lot of great product for a lot of people that come up here to Alaska to see it. I guess I'd like to just touch on a couple things that I heard in testimony earlier, if I could just give you my perspective. First, I think our initiatives are supposed to be single issues, and I think the Lieutenant Governor failed in a big way when he allowed this initiative to go through, because truly, it was not a single-issue initiative. And I think you as a legislator or legislators can clearly understand that. Secondly, if it had been a single-issue initiative, a $50 head tax, it would be just like the reserves tax question. There'd be no doubt what the voters clearly said. But in this case, that isn't the case. Secondly, Lauren, you asked about competition. Lauren's one of the new kids on the block. There was a very well-established large company doing whale watching tours around here, and they had all the business. And they were probably packing 100,000 passengers a year, although I don't know that for sure, and I don't know what their net rates are because the government hasn't told me. But through my business acumen, I was able to kind of tell what they were doing. But Lauren and his company came in as a new operator here
5 years ago?
Yeah. 5 years ago. And approached Cruise Line and said, we want to give this other company some competition. And the Cruise Lines welcomed them. Of course, as another operator here in town, we don't want any more tour product being offered in Juneau. It's competition to us. But competition continues to evolve here. There's over 40 tour products offered here in Juneau alone to the hundreds of thousands of visitors that come here. Skagway, town of 800, same thing. Over 40 tour products. There's plenty of competition. I guess some of the earlier testimony has said that they support 417 or 217, kind of as it is. I don't think it goes far enough. In the first section, and I don't know what version F will be when the sponsor comes back with it, but we're not a paid promotion. I really resent it being referred to as a paid promotion. We're a tour product. We're just like an airline, like Alaska Airlines or some other investment, I mean, huge business that's invested lots and lots of capital in this to provide a quality product to these people. We spend buku bucks on insurance and employees and keep people employed year-round so that we'll have them the next year. And we're not a promotion. And then I guess, while you're bearing with me, I guess, you know, if we're going to refer if we're going to stay in here, and I appreciate the fact that you're considering this and you're willing to go at least this far, but if we're going to say that other alternatives may be available at a lower price, then I suggest that we also say that they're also available at a higher price. They're also available at lesser quality. They're also available by fly-by-nights that leave the state in the wintertime. I mean, how far do we go there when we start saying that they're available at a lower price? I think we need to be reasonable to the people that have made millions in investments around here, and I thank you very much. And I'm willing to take a question if you'd like.
Mr. Jacobson, I believe that that part of the bill was just to inform people who are on the tour boats that there is alternatives.
Alternatives is great, Representative, but if we say it lesser, then I think we should qualify because they're also available at higher prices and they're available at lesser.
Representative Gatto had a question.
Actually, I didn't, but he looked right at me like I must have had one. But I believe the motivation for this part of the initiative rested from the idea that onshore tours had no opportunity to let the people who were arriving know that they were available because on at sea the night before the ship's list, tomorrow here are the opportunities. I know, I've been on the ships. Here's what we do. You meet in the big theater and they say, we've got only 24 kayak tours, so you better hurry up and get here. And we have 60 of these and 100 of those and airplane tours, and they're $400, and we guarantee that you won't miss the ship. That's what happened. Now, here's what I think the motivation was. There are some people who wanted to do airplane tours who couldn't, because they could not get any exposure to the thousands of people who were going to be arriving the next morning. They couldn't. And as a result, they felt somewhat disenfranchised that these people were coming, but they were delivered a product that advertised one place where you could go. And I believe, and I didn't write this initiative, but I believe that the author of the initiative was thinking about those people who said, I'm trying to earn a living here. It's tough to compete when they get off that ship and they've got only, there's 400 tickets for airplanes and they're all gone. I wonder if I should go look around and find somebody else. They usually have done something else that the cruise ships offered also. That's my understanding of how this came about, that there was some people who simply felt, what about me? Did the cruise ships really own this place and determine what tours are available, or is it really a free market? That's my understanding.
Did you have a question?
Well, I believe the question that was intended was, you know, how could you do such a thing? And that's my answer to how it came about.
And Representative Gatto, I think it's answered. Somebody told me that the word of lesser value was inserted in this. I don't have version E. If that is the case, all I'm saying is I don't think that belongs in there. If we qualify it as lesser, I mean, an alternative is fine. And that's what you just said. And I have no objection to that. Alternatives are available. That's good.
Or similar.
But if
products.
We say lesser value, then we should say higher value. We should say lesser quality. We should say fly-by-nights. Where do we draw the line? That's all I'm saying.
Maybe you can discuss that with the
sponsor
and see what you can come up with.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jacobson, any other people, any new testimony in the audience?
Who was Mr. Jacobson representing himself? Or? Who he represents?
Mr. Jacobson, that's fine. Representative Lynn had a question of who you were testing.
What tour do you operate here?
Company's name is Wings of Alaska and Wings Airways.
Yeah. I took the flight last, doing one of the many special sessions.
Thank you.
I'm back here talking to you, so I made it.
Do we have any more public testimony? Hearing and seeing none, public testimony is closed for today. We will take up the new CS next Tuesday at 5 o'clock. I think in this room we will post it.
Okay.
Right now we're going to go to Mike Andrews. And before we go to Mike, I want to maybe ask committee members, ask Representative Holmes, as soon as she gets this new CS, please get it to the committee members, answer their questions, discuss it with them, make sure that they're familiar with it. Mike, Alaska Works Partnership Incorporated. Mike Andrews is here to talk about the workforce development issues. Kind of timely, we're discussing the AGEA right now in Juneau. We'll ask the members to hold your questions until the end of the presentation. Mike's got about a five-minute video, I believe, we're going to hear first on gas pipeline.
Right.
Jobs?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Mike. Name and affiliation, please.
I'm Mike Andrews. I'm the director of Alaska Works Partnership Incorporated. We're a consortium of Alaska's billing trades unions and their apprenticeship programs, and our focus is on the construction industry and moving Alaskans into jobs in the construction industry. I'd like to do a five-minute video on our pipeline training, and then I have provided some slides. I'll try to make that short. I have also given you a packet with a lot of information in there, so you'll be able to look through that if any of this interests you. So we'll start out with this. Hopefully this will work. I'm a low-tech guy in a high-tech job. Coming? Oh, here it is down here.
Joint Pipeline Trades class. These young Alaskans, 35% of them from rural Alaska, about 13% of them women, will be the next generation of Alaska's pipeliners, and we congratulate you today. The operating engineers, the Teamsters, the laborers, and the pipe fitters. And we have a lot of support from the governor and the legislation. We appreciate that.
This program is the best in the nation for training pipeliners. We are going to build a gas pipeline, and these young people are going to be building it.
Oh, I was very impressed. I tell you, to see 97 people out there working as a team and being as efficient as they were and only being trained for 2 weeks, that's impressive.
These apprentices need to understand how the different crews and crafts work together, mesh together, how everything times out, because in the real world, it all comes down to productivity and profits for the oil company.
For the past 4 years, Alyeska has been a part of this academy, and we consider it not only an investment in your future, but also an investment in our future success.
When the legislature came in with $1.5 million this year to buy equipment, basic equipment, so that the trainees have the right equipment to practice on, so that they're ready to go when and if things break.
As I was watching these folks do what they do so well, I was thinking those hands not just working on 12-inch steel pipe, but actually working on very large diameter, thick-walled, high-pressure natural gas pipeline. So that's what I was thinking about as I watched these folks do what they do so well.
This training opportunity provides not only an environment where we can refine and develop our individual skills and our trades, but it also gives us the opportunity to see the whole pipeline process and to see how each of the trades interacts and interfaces with the others to bring this pipeline to completion.
I'd like to thank the union for accepting me to go to this class and all the equipment we got to use out there, and our instructors with all the knowledge they got to give.
I'd like to thank you all for coming today, and on behalf of the apprentices, for the laborers, thank you for this chance to get to work with the other unions, to work with all of you, and thank you all for showing up.
Well, we need to train Alaskans for the next generation of work, and a gas line is the next mega project that's going to come along. And we need to make sure that Alaskans get the job. These are Alaskan resources. These are Alaskan youth. They need to be trained so that they're ready, willing, and able to take on these projects.
First and foremost, I wanted to say thanks on behalf of all of our apprentices to everybody who contributed to this training. I think it was a complete success in allowing us to work with not only the tools, but the other trades in this pipeline industry. It's our future. Thank you.
That was just a little view of our pipeline training, Alaska Works Partnership, pipeline unions, and the North Slope Contractors Association, along with the state, teamed up for the last 3 years. And we've trained over 297 apprentices and entry-level workers, many from rural Alaska. And we have had over 95% employment on Alaska's North Slope on new development. So what we really want to stress is that it's not just the potential gas pipeline. It's the work that's going on right now, including the repairs of the pipeline. So if I could, I'll do my PowerPoint presentation.
I believe that's this program.
Yes. And I'll go through this quickly. The Denali Commission helped us get started.
And for the committee members, if you have a question during this part of the presentation, just go ahead and ask Mike.
Okay. Helped us get started in 2000, along with the U.S. Department of Labor. And they've Denali Commission has provided funding, major funding, for 6 years for two of our programs, Rural Apprenticeship Outreach. That's a program that the state used to operate years ago before price of oil went down and the construction industry went down in the late 80s and the early 90s. We're averaging about 50 to 60 people from rural Alaska every year into the trade apprenticeship programs, where they receive technical trade courses that are paid for by the private sector, and millions are paid to apprentices in on-the-job training wages, over 350 to date. Also, with the Denali Commission, we do a building maintenance repair apprenticeship program, primarily in Western Alaska, assisting regional Native organizations that build affordable housing for the most part. We've built over 350 homes with apprentices. It's the largest construction apprenticeship program in rural Alaska today. Our apprentices also work on schools, clinics, roads, safe water projects. I've listed some of the major employers, and again, millions in on-the-job training wages are paid to rural Alaskans through this effort.
Hey, Mike, you said that a lot of your major funding comes from the Denali Commission. You know, we're hearing from our federal level representatives, legislators, senators, congressmen, that we're going to get less and less money from the federal government. Where are we going on this? You know, what do we expect from the state?
Well, Representative Newman, I'm hopeful that through legislation such as the two bills you've introduced, that the state legislators will find a way to begin to fund vocational and technical education. Right now, the only two programs with state funding are the State Training Employment Program, known as STEP, and the Technical Vocational Education Program, known as TVEP. Where we're going, it certainly is to leverage more resources from the private sector with industry support. But other than that, we have to face reality. The federal dollars are being reduced. We also operate a Women in the Trades program and offer construction apprenticeship preparation courses for women statewide. We've had over 40 women accepted into trade apprenticeship programs so far, and over 100 have been trained and focused towards entry-level jobs in construction. It's a very successful program. 2 years ago, we received the Exemplary Partnership Award from the U.S. Department of Labor, the highest award a not-for-profit can receive. We also operate a Helmets to Hard Hats program in conjunction with the National Building Construction Trades and the Department of the Army, Department of Defense. We started in 2004. We help those who are returning from overseas, those who are retiring out of the military, who are interested in getting into trade apprenticeship programs to help fill our workforce gap. Last year, we had 37 Helmets to Hard Hats apprentices get into trade programs. We've had over 100 so far. I think it's around 120 so far since we started. We also have a memorandum of understanding with the state to assist veterans through the job centers around the state and provide support while they're in training. And it's a very successful program, and it's a national program. In Alaska and Pennsylvania are the only two states that have their own program with the national. I mentioned the pipeline training that film was from 2005. We have had three courses so far, 297 apprentices with high employment working on the North Slope. Right now, folks are working on the Ugaruk project for Pioneer Resources and H.C. Price, and I'm told this week that it's like ants on an anthill up there right now. There's so much activity on that project. The legislature did provide $1.5 million for pipeline training equipment, which has now been put to use in our annual training program. And last year, $3 million for construction of a pipeline training facility in Fairbanks. That ties into federal legislation, the Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline Act of 2005, where another $20 million, should the project go, will be committed to the state, of which 15% or $3 million will be provided for the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Facility. We instituted this year pre-pipeline training at our partners at the Rural Regional Training Center so that folks from Kotzebue, Bethel, Delta, King Sam, and other places have a feeder system into our main pipeline training that leads to employment.
Mike,
Fairbanks.
I'll interrupt you there.
Yep.
How does a area within the state get a hold of you if they want to have some more regional training in the area? Say Representative Johansson wants something in Ketchikan area, something like that. How does he go about contacting you and trying to make that happen?
That's a good question. This morning I got a call from the Greater Ketchikan Area Home Builders Association to talk about our construction academies and how do they get engaged there. So it's primarily reach out, call me. That's how it happens. We primarily look for employers who are willing to hire. We don't just train for training's sake. There has to be a commitment somewhere in the community by an employer to employ folks. But generally, this is how everything is generated, where employers or industry associations have contacted us and asked for assistance. So it's that simple, but then what we do is we look for resources and how we can leverage and combine resources to make that happen.
And Mike's contact information is in your folder, this folder here. I think his card's in there. And if you haven't had an opportunity to sit down and talk with Mike on this, what I really suggest you do is a wealth of information.
Thank you, Chairman Newman. The Pipeline Training Center, right now we're working closely with the Fairbanks North Star Borough to offer a statewide training facility, state-of-the-art, modern facility in Fairbanks. We have located land. We have our eyes on 52 acres in Fairbanks, and we're in negotiations right now to award to a design and engineering firm to go with phase one of the training facility, and we're looking for another $3 million to complete that facility. One of the things that Alaska Works is known for is working with high school students and with school districts and with industry to offer construction academies. I have provided a booklet in your folder that talks about the 9 school districts that we worked with last year, where we assisted over 75 high school age students to get prepared for apprenticeship or entry-level training so they can get some work experience, paid work experience. Last year, that was St. Mary's, where we assisted the Lower Yukon School District in conjunction with the Yukon Delta Fisheries Development Association. In Bethel at Ute and Lavardit, King Salmon at the Southwest Alaska Vocational Education Center, in Klawak with the Prince of Wales Education Consortium, certainly our Anchorage Construction Academy, Delta with the Delta Career Advancement Center in the school district, and in Nome with NACTEC, the Northwest Arctic Current Technical Center, Ninilchik with the Cook Inlet Tribal, and we have served over 150 youth with these academies. We've also experienced a significant gain in math scores among students. We integrate youth leadership, a youth leadership course, and a trades math course in every one of our academies, and we believe we're having an impact on better math scores within the schools. The Anchorage Construction Academy, many people are familiar with that. That was funded by the legislature through a grant last year. We were able to start in 2006 in partnership with the Associated General Contractors, Anchorage Home Builders, and the statewide Alaska Home Builders Association. The school district and the Joint Apprenticeship Training Committees operated by the unions and their employers. The concept was that afternoon courses would be held at the King Career Center using the facility after school hours from 2:30 to 5, offering electives for high school students, and offering evening courses in basic skills, carpentry, electrical, plumbing, welding, drywall, finishing for adults in the evening. We kicked that off in October. So far, more than 700 students, high school students, have elected to take after-hours high school courses. This is a phenomenal response. The school district has gone from two schools plus the King Career Center involved to eight high schools, including Eagle River. We have assisted over 150 adults get basic skills training for entry-level jobs and to prepare them for a trade apprenticeship. And that model is being put into place in Fairbanks. We expect to be training the same model up there in the fall of 2007. And then we're looking at expanding to Mat-Su, Kenai, and as I mentioned today, Ketchikan, greater Ketchikan area, called and asked for some support, and the Juneau home builders are interested. So it's sort of a tipping point here, I believe, for this mobile and innovative vocational education program in the state. So overall, I'd like to say that industry, labor unions, and education partnerships are closing the construction skills gap. We're preparing a new generation of Alaska workers to build a gas pipeline. We have the support of most industry associations, hundreds of employers, and we have a proven track record, and we believe we've created a cost-effective and non-duplicating training system for the state. So that's my quick comments, and I certainly appreciate your time, and I'll answer any questions.
You know, it's just as my stint as chair in education and now working with the EDT committee, and maybe you can maybe fill me in or as to what Alaska Works Partnership is doing in these areas, or your opinion on what I think maybe how we can move forward. And the state, Commissioner Sampson has set up a grade level course, I guess, determination of where standards-based
employability standards?
Well, no, standards, grade level standards, okay, is what he calls it, where 12th grade math should be at this level, 11th grade, 10th grade, mm-hmm, in the core subjects of reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're working with your youth programs, you know, it's also important that you see you had some evening programs, but I think we need to incorporate this into the daytime programs so that they can get credit for the courses that they have. But I would think that I'd like to see the industry move a little bit more towards grade level standards in the jobs that they have, in OJT jobs. You know, Ketchikan, and Ketchikan at the dry dock there, where if we could bring in students from the senior class or junior class, make sure that Department of Education says, okay, the math that they're going to be doing on their OJT meets grade 12 level standards in math. They're going to be doing a certain amount of reading and writing, doing their OJT, you know, and I've been working diligently to try and get those all to mesh together. And just to reiterate that, I think that that's where we're going to mix them all together, where we're going to have private industry helping train our youth. They're going to be getting their high school credits because there's only so much time in a day. And they're going to be learning the grade level math, reading and writing, writing, reading, arithmetic, 3 R's, because we have our standards. What is Alaska Works Partners? Do you, does your program work somewhat in that nature? Or?
Representative Newman, you know, working with schools is complicated. That's why we pilot things. Each district has its own needs, and certainly that's why when we talk with schools, we listen and find out what their own needs are. But I would say, in general, particularly with Alaska Quality School Initiative and with No Child Left Behind and with the funding constraints that are there, that we are, let's say, we're constricted in terms of what we might be able to do to assist students, particularly those students who may go to work at the Ketchikan shipyard or whatever. So what schools like about our program is we generally say we won't take any of the instruction time that you have during the day because there's no instruction time left. We won't interrupt the planning time that your teachers have. We sort of bring it in a kit. And we bring the resources, and we already have the employers to fit because the schools will tell you we're out of time, we're out of resources. So what is basically happening for us is we're basically showing them a way to get additional vocational technical training pointed at in-demand industry jobs that pay well, and sort of taking this, creating the solution for them. And I think you would hear that from the Anchorage School Board, for example, or the Lower Yukon Kuskokwim, or Lower Yukon school district. The thing that we really need to consider, if I just get on my soapbox here a bit, is we need to bring back vocational, career, and technical education, not only in the high schools, but in the 13th and 14th grade as well, because what industry will generally tell you is that math is fine, but we need a more applied math. You know, that's what we need. And then what we've also learned that when you offer alternatives such as vocational education, you can increase math scores, you can increase science scores within the school, and you can increase high school completion. There's great research out there that shows that you'll get students who will stay in school as a result of having those alternative opportunities, and you will get math and science scores that'll bring you from the bottom to the top. That's my firm belief. There's a lot of research to back that, and of course, in our state, we have constricted vocational education since the price of oil went down to the to basically $9 a barrel in the 80s. We got rid of community colleges, and now what you'll find across the state is a lot of the shop space is now either warehoused or administrative space. So we've got a long road to go. That's my soapbox.
And I think you're right, Mike. You know, as there's plenty of statistics out there, and I don't think there's anybody who's going to argue that you learn math and you learn reading through applied sciences by doing it in the classroom. That's going to increase our graduation rate.
Absolutely.
Statewide, because there's a lot of kids who just don't want to learn math the traditional way, maybe through that book, but when they're working to rebuild an engine and they got to figure out the volume of that cylinder for horsepower, you know, V equals pi r squared times L, and different and reading motor manuals, that you're getting that math, you're getting that reading again by taking our grade level standards, putting them into the classroom or into a job workplace, I think that we can get there.
Right.
Representative Johansson?
Thank you. Is that the actual formula?
Yes, it is.
Just make that up.
We're a tag team.
I'm impressed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Pi r squared times L.
You mentioned that you work, you know, the Ketchikan holders contacted you, and, you know, you've obviously had success in this area up north. Can you just briefly walk me through, the chairman mentioned the Ketchikan Shipyard is another entity that is doing manufacturing, metal work, similar to things that are going to happen on the pipeline. Can you just briefly walk me through how, say, the home builders contact you? Where does it go from there? Do you contact the schools? Do you work with the home builders? How does that whole thing kind of coalesce into a program that works?
Representative Johansson, what we do is we follow up on the conversation and we basically encourage them to pull the partners together that need to be together. For instance, the talk today was we need to find out who at the school district needs to be engaged, who at the Ketchikan Community College needs to be engaged, and what other industries need to be engaged for a dialogue, because it takes many folks to figure out where the resources might come from and also where the talent is in the community. It's you know, there's a lot of folks who are ready, willing, and able to assist locally in training. There's folks who are willing to put up some resources generally locally. And what we do is throw out models based on our experience and have a conversation and then let the local and regional folks determine what product that might be. But for example, if we were able to work with the home builders, you know, our idea right now is if you want to get as much local hire on a gas line, let's get as many Alaskans, you know, working in construction today, because they need to learn those skills on the job for a project that's out in the future. So in your region where it's important to have these skilled workers, what you do is you get a 8 to 10, 12 students going in a certain direction, and then you try to expand out. And then when you look at the other needs, let's say for the shipyard, what are the metal trades needs there? Let's see if there's a welding component. For example, we created a 40-hour evening welding class in Anchorage that, you know, I mean, if we had if we could train 500 people, they would sign up for it. We don't have the resources for it, but it's basically leading to certification, because there are many different occupations that have some type of welding need, but they're not all the same. So it gives us an opportunity for folks to generalize and see if they want to do that. So we just try to who are willing to hire people. We need that commitment. Now, you can't contractually, unless you have a project labor agreement or something like that, you can't contractually do that. You have to go on good faith. So if you do a project, as we did with the Anchorage School District, where we had 14 students last year and everybody went to work right after the 3 weeks of intensive training, you know, if you don't have that kind of commitment from employers, we just don't come back. You just don't come back, because it doesn't work if you don't put them to work. You're just training for training's sake. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So basically the impetus is on the local folks to really identify locally the resources and the proper people that, you know, kind of the lay of the land, and then you, you guys kind of provide direction and help and advice.
Representative Johansson, we, I guess you would call us technical assistance. And then if we have resources such as from the Denali Commission, who provides us dollars for they're limited, but we have dollars for rural training, which means not Anchorage, not Fairbanks, not Juneau. Then we may be able to throw some seed money at something or some resources at it. But primarily technical assistance, and then the gaps. What are the gaps? Let's figure out who can do what, who brings what to the table.
And Dave, can you fill us in a little bit on how you can help industry come in to I guess more of larger industry, and I'll just give an example or two. Northrop Grumman was going to come up to Ketchikan to help develop a program at their operation, at the dry dock operation, that teaches skills, but in a, again, where they're teaching more math and reading and English like that. I know I've talked to Dave Rees from BP. They'd like to give up to 10 scholarships a year where they're bringing a high school kid in. Put them in a flow station where they're doing math, they're doing reading, they're doing writing. But to get an OJT, they're getting their high school credits, they're meeting the needs of No Child Left Behind, because we have our grade level standards approved by Commissioner Sampson. What can you do to help facilitate bringing more larger industries like that into the state? Or what can we do to help you, I guess maybe would be the question.
Well, Representative Newman, I used to be the director of the Alaska Human Resource Investment Council, and that was the now is the Alaska Workforce Investment Board. And certainly, you know, you need to work with your the administration and different departments to, with the resources they have. But primarily, that sort of architecture, workforce development, and you really have to find out again what the employer's needs are, how many jobs they think they can commit to. And what do they bring to the table? What you're going to find in a lot of cases is they have proprietary training. They really want you to bring people to a certain level, and they'll train them from there. And you'll hear that from the construction industry as well. Just bring the basic skills, someone with the right attitude, someone that can work as a team, somebody that has the basic math abilities to learn, and we'll take it from there. And then you may get into some, you know, incentives, let's say, particularly where you may get in my soapbox here again. You know, if we had more activity at the 13th and 14th year, career and technical education, because it is a blur today. It's not just academic, it's techademia. The world of work has changed so much. It's so technical. We need to, for example, Washington State has opportunity grants for 13th and 14th year. Georgia pays tuition for 13th and 14th year. So if you have a system that can connect career pathways from your schools into the secondary and post-secondary and apprenticeship programs, with that system, then you really just need to have the information from the employers and the jobs. They have to have the jobs, and then you're going to have people willing to sit down and work with them to design it. I mean, it's like getting ready for a gas pipeline. It's all pretty much out in the air there. You're just starting somewhere, and you're pointing in a direction.
You kind of talked a little bit about post-secondary, but what can we do at the secondary level, at the high school level?
Well, I think I meant, excuse me, Representative Newman, I think I mentioned it earlier, is that we really should take a look at solid investment from the state in vocational education in the high schools, and also at some career pathways in the lower grades, because students that you may have heard begin to deselect in the early years in terms of what occupations. I'd say that if you looked at pre-1985, Alaska had one of the finest vocational education systems in America. And we had one of the highest graduation rates in America. And I really believe that what has really occurred is the absence of resources. When the price of oil went down, so did that. The price of oil has come up. I hope that that rising tide might lift the current technical education boat, because that's economic development. Without the skills invested in our people, we're not going to have the full employment or the high employment that we need to have a prosperous state. And I'm not running for anything, by the way.
And it's not just the price of oil, but when No Child Left Behind was enacted, too, it had some unintended consequences where we have to have highly qualified status teachers in the core subjects. So in urban school districts, it wasn't as difficult as it was in rural districts, where you have a small ADM, average daily membership, but they have to have, again, highly qualified status teachers in the core subjects, reading, writing, and arithmetic. So you don't have, you have a small school that has to have a separate teacher. The math teacher can't teach English. And this has been very difficult, where they have to hire three teachers, you know, for different subjects, because, and particularly in rural Alaska, they have green teachers, new teachers. They don't have the ability to go out there and pay the extra additional costs for teachers who have additional qualifications or a higher education that can do two or three classes. You know, it's somewhat of a difficult thing, but it's not just what the price of oil, but actually what No Child Left Behind, one of the effects of that. Again, that's where I think we need to really get into grade level standards and getting the programs in there. Representative Johansson?
Do you get any pushback or reluctance from the school districts to pick up the vocational portion that has kind of gone away since the 80s? What's the attitude from the districts?
Representative Johansson, the attitude is becoming more positive. A few years ago, there was a very negative view, in the sense of, because No Child Left Behind and the unintended consequences were upon them, and the changes in school formula funding. I think what has happened, they've gained some inspiration, particularly when they see other resources are made available. Like the state last year put out a very good youth initiative that assisted schools. They actually put career guides in the schools, because the career counselors that were there were already fully booked and may not be pushing students to anywhere but college. So the attitude I'm finding is very good. They're willing to sit down. They're willing to invite you in. They're willing to sit down and work it out. But again, what they really like is if you can do something that doesn't interrupt their normal instruction day, the time that's committed, and where you can bring in instructors. I mean, that's why it's taken off for us, as we package it, and they don't have to worry about bringing an instructor to it. But they're all dying to have more resources across the board, but certainly for vocational education.
I think a little bit more on that, Representative Johansson, is the fact that special needs is in the same category as vocational education, which is at the school district level. And one special needs child, which is a mandated requirement,